If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold. Welcome to Above the Fray. I'm here with my co-host, Steve Clark. Good evening, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
And our number is 914-803-4522 if you'd like to join in the conversation tonight. Steve and I are going to talk about excessive regulation. And I know off the top of my head today, Steve, I was thinking about the banking regulations, Common Core in the educational system, the NSA listening to who knows what, and even government intrusion into the private sector. I was reading an article about Elon Musk yesterday, the founder of and CEO of Tesla, also Sun Solar and SpaceX. Sun Solar makes solar panels, SpaceX sends spaceships up into space, private ships, and Tesla, of course, making the electric car. And what I read is that $42 billion have been provided Elon Musk through government subsidies. And so this combination, Steve, of a centralized government intruding into every aspect of our private lives and that intrusion growing at the same time that this behemoth government is growing is deeply concerning to me, because I grew up, and I know you did too, in the United States that there was still a concept of privacy. There was still this concept of if you were in the private sector, you could go somewhere on your own without government assistance or government intrusion, government regulations, etc. And that is not only dwindling, if not gone, Steve, but when I think about how many young people think socialism is a good thing, and how I heard today that both Bernie Sanders and O'Malley, the governor of Maryland, who's running for the Democratic nomination against Hillary Clinton, will both push her to the left. And I have this strange feeling that that will serve her well, because so much of this country has moved left. And I personally can only attribute it to the fact that we haven't taught what socialism and communism is for at least a generation. And there's been this progressive movement in politics to move the country, in fact, towards socialism. So, Steve, any one of those, jump in.
Yeah, I would say the first part is the one that I think I find the most disturbing, is that we've had kind of a, regarding the privatization or socialization of business, where what's happened is, you know, the following is that it's been a privatization of profits and a socialization of losses. And one only looks at the banks as kind of as a premier recipients, where they got paid if they made a lot of money. And the losses, when the losses actually came in 2008, they were able to pass off those losses onto the wealth, onto the private sector. I'm sorry, to the public sector. So they were able to keep the money and the losses they were able to pass on. And it seems like we're in a country that's really speeding up that process now, where the really smart businessmen and the really smart, intelligent people have realized that there's a game to be had. And Elon Musk is no fool by any means. And what he's doing is that he's been able to figure out that there's a movement within government that's rewarding businesses if they're able to move on this green technology. So whether we like it or not, or whether what your political beliefs are, it doesn't really matter to me, really. But if you look at it from a standalone basis, on a financial basis, on a standalone matter, meaning profits and losses, none of these companies have been able to make any money. And the way that they are staying in business is through subsidies. So I'm really referring to the wind sector, the solar sector, and as much as the media tries to portray something else, the cold hard facts is that they all live and die by the subsidies that taxpayers are paying. And so again, we have a system where you get something like Elon Musk, and I'm not denying his brilliance, but the fact is that he's making money at the public trough. And the last point that I want to address in that matter is that really when we have a market that is so unsustainable by the amount of debt that we're creating, what we have in basic economics is you have a misallocation of resources. And so because there's so much debt, you can allocate more resources to bad projects. And so we have two things that are happening. We have a misallocation of resources, number one. And number two is what we have is the socialization of business, which is the privatization of profits and the socialization of losses. And I think those are going to have tremendously negative effects on our economy, and we will pay for those losses at some point.
You mentioned how they don't make profits. I also read that Elon Musk, in any three of his three businesses, he hasn't made a profit in 10 years, never once turned a profit. And yet we, the taxpayer, through the government, keeps pumping more and more money into what he's doing. Now, I'm not saying that there's never, I'm not a total libertarian. I'm not saying there's never a reason for there to be some sort of subsidy, or when it comes to inventors or entrepreneurs who are trying to build something that eventually will benefit the whole, that there shouldn't be some relationship. But the problem is, you mentioned the privatization of profit and the socialization of loss, which I think is brilliant. I don't know if it's yours or not, Steve, but it's a brilliant phrasing of what's actually going on. It harkens me back to Elon Musk. When I say Tesla, I mean the real Tesla, the original Tesla, Nikola Tesla. It harkens back to me to the relationship that Edison had with the federal government versus the relationship that Tesla had with Westinghouse. Edison's relationship was with GE. And GE, even back then, all the way through to today, had a very unhealthy relationship with centralized government, with the federal government. And it was actually a political battle that was waged between Tesla and Westinghouse, Edison and Tesla, because it was a battle between the political infighters, which were GE and Edison and the federal government, and then the political outsiders, which were Tesla and Westinghouse, really trying to create something of true benefit. And it isn't that the light bulb isn't a benefit, but the reality is that what Tesla was working on was infinitely more futuristic. And if explored to its possible end at the time, if he hadn't have had to wage the financial war that he had to wage and the political war that he had to wage, Tesla's avenues of inquiry were infinitely more relevant and helpful, would have been helpful to us today had they been developed, than had they been sidelined by the politics. And so I see four aspects to this. I see I see the privatization of profit. I see the socialization of losses. I see politization, the politicizing of all of it to gain a massive social control through the centralized government. And then I see, Steve, like you wrote in your blog this week, or your most recent blog, I see gaming of the system by those who achieve those tremendous financial largesse from their relationship with the government, and then they go and they move out of the country and give up their citizenship, or they plant their money offshore because they don't want to pay taxes in the one country that still, A, subsidized them and let them grow the fortune that they grew. So it looks like a real perversion, almost like a cancer to me, like a disease that has crept into what was a free market and has completely prostituted and perverted it.
Yeah, I don't know if I can say that any better.
Because that's what's happening, is that as more people figure out how to escape the system, then the government comes in and writes more laws and writes more regulations. And so what happens is only the very brightest are able to get their money out, and everybody else who looks to build their wealth gets trapped into a system where they really can't get out. It's very similar to the point of, you know, when Warren Buffett comes out and says we need to raise more taxes, and he always gives this fallacy argument where he says that his secretary pays more taxes than he does. And in some ways he's right, because he's able to take all his income and defer the income and not declare it as income, but declare it as dividends. And so it's a way that very smart people like a Buffett or some of these other guys, they clamor for higher taxes, and the media lavishly heaps praise on them, but not realizing the games that they play. And that's kind of the nature of what, you know, this discussion is about, and the blog post that I put is that, you know, the media, you know, heaps this lavish praise on some of the people in the business community, not understanding the games that they're playing. And I think these guys are very smart. They play it in such a way that you're not able to notice. You know, case in point, if you look at the news on MSNBC, for example, and we tend to pick on them quite a bit, but you know, you have to realize that they're owned by GE, and GE is one of the biggest benefactors of a very generous tax rate, and they're able to grow like crazy because of that generous tax rate. We as the American people don't have access to those tax breaks and tax benefits. So the point that I think is critical that everybody realizes is that there's very smart people that are gaming the system, and as the system gets gamed, they're going to make more and more laws, and the smartest people will get the money out. And I mean, it's case in point. Look at what they're doing now. Is that many of the public companies, Facebook included, and some of the other larger ones, they set up all these offshore entities where they book the profits and they keep the money offshore, so that money that could come back into the U.S. could benefit the U.S. But given the amount of rules and regulations, they opt out of the system. They opt out of playing and abiding by the rules, because the U.S. has made it so difficult and so complex that, again, everybody is inclined and forced to cheat, is kind of what I put in the article.
So I see another social effect of what's happening, and I see it on the other end of the financial spectrum. Yes, there's gaming of the system on the high end in every way that you just described and we discussed. On the opposite end, in essence, there's both enslavement and there's gaming of the system on the welfare end, on the subsidy end of receiving social subsidies, of receiving whether it's welfare or food stamps or whatever those programs are, Medicaid. It's living off of that bureaucracy that doles out just enough to keep people alive, but not enough to either, A, give them any quality of life or let them rise up through what should be a non-caste system. And so you've got people on that end who learn how to game the system as well, because they're sort of locked into it, and yet they realize being locked into it, there are ways they can benefit from it. So I see that gaming on both ends with two very obviously different results, Steve. And then what I see in the middle, I see the majority of people who aren't in either one of those extremes. They're neither the extreme wealthy nor are the underclass that are living off of social welfare. They're the people who are still trying every day, like you, like me, like all those other people like us, to maintain what we have and create something a little better for ourselves and, if we have children, for them. And so when I look at the current situation, in some ways, I see the aristocracy of England and the slave population of colonial United States, and I see the colonists in between who didn't want to live that way and essentially broke away from England and kept at what they believed in until there was a civil war. I really think there is this middle group of the nation that constitutes the majority of the nation that is getting shortchanged the most, if you would, because they're working the hardest and reaping the least. And as you move toward this socialization, I think we're either going to move fully into it and lose what we typically know as this constitutional republic, with, as Mark Levin always says, we're already living in a post-constitutional nation. I think we're either going to move completely into socialism and beyond, which is, I don't even want to contemplate, or there's going to be some kind of uprising. I'm not saying it's going to be a civil war or there's going to be secession, but I think there will be some sort of social unrest that rises to a level that may create confrontation. And we know, we've talked in other shows, Steve, we think in some ways that's what the federal government wants. It's militarizing the police and it's beefing up that aspect of controlling the public through both data mining and militarizing the police, that they almost want a confrontation, because then that allows them to gain even greater concentration of centralized power. I don't like to be a pessimist, and fundamentally I'm not. I always believe there'll be divine intervention. I mean, I really do. I believe that. You know, it's like I said last week to my daughter, she's in the Israeli Defense Forces, and she was just complaining to me for like 48 hours how bad the organization was within her unit and how bad the planning is and how bad the actual implementation of just routine things that the units need to do every day, not talking about a war situation. And when she laid all this out to me and I heard what she was telling me, I said, you know what? God must really be on Israel's side, because I can't understand how they win wars. They're so disorganized within the army itself. So it's kind of like it's that. You know, I do believe in divine intervention. I do believe in nature, you know, like it did recently in Texas. It has a way of refocusing us on what really matters. I do think that there will be something that will intervene, but absent that intervention, if you don't believe in such things, I think in some ways there's a very grim outlook here. How do you feel, Steve?
Yeah, there's an interesting case that came up, and I don't know if many people followed it, but there was a story that came out in the last few weeks about many of the big banks were fined for currency manipulations, and they were fined by the government. And one of the jokes that went around, that came around, said, "Where's my check?" And the story behind it was that, you know, the currency markets are some of the largest in the world, and when clients would call up, there was alleged collusion that took place between the banks of getting the best price. The banks that were asked to quote the currency would then collude together and get more money out of the client. And so the gist of it was that the government fined the banks because they were able to find this collusion. But the joke was really on us, because at the end of the day, the people that were harmed are not going to receive a check. The banks are forced to write a check to the government for that predatory behavior. But this is where it gets interesting. The banks are then going to issue more bonds by the U.S. Treasury and by different entities, different corporate entities and different quasi-sovereigns and different World Bank issues and IMF issues that are going to be needing for restructuring, advice, things of that nature. And so the fines that they pay, that the banks have to pay the government, is eventually going to come right back to the banks in form of business. And so it becomes like a really disgusting self-fulfilling animal that just feeds on itself, where the government fines the banks for for basically just being, you know, general grossness and extracting as much money out of corporate clients and individual clients as they possibly can. Then they fine them. The banks then pay the government, and the government then in turn gives them more business so that the circle grows. But at the end of the day, the person who is fined, the persons that were most harmed by the actions, are given nothing. And it's very similar to what happened in the, you know, if you think about what happened in the banking crisis, is that the ones who were most responsible for causing the crisis were then rewarded for more capital to save their hides, but the people who actually lost their houses got nothing for that. So basically, the people who lost their houses, and then had to pay taxes, which that taxes went to support the government, and the government then basically gave money to the banks all over again. So it's this kind of warped, disgusting world that we live in now, that nobody seems to question these actions that are taking place. And so I do believe there is going to be some type of uprising, and if you're looking at it, I think they're the beginnings of the seeds that have been planted. I mean, I think Baltimore and New York and some of these places have had, you know, if you look at the numbers recently, they're saying there's some of the highest levels in 15 years in terms of murders and criminal activity that's taking place all over again. And I think it's a function of what's happening in, as you said before, is a general unease that's taking place throughout the country.
I think those uprisings are different. I think those uprisings are deliberately being sparked to incite the underclass, because they are most easily incited because they have the least to lose and they don't see a way out of their predicament. And so you've got both radical Islam and the extreme left in this country and socialism within this, socialist organizations within this country, fanning the flames of Black America, because they know that that's the easiest place to spark the uprising. The uprising that would call in military and martial law. What I'm talking about is a different kind of uprising. I'm almost talking about an enlightened uprising. I'm talking about an uprising of that middle sector that is neither the ones gaming it on the top or gaming it on the bottom. We are, in fact, the majority. Those of us who are in the middle, who don't make the mega millions and billions and aren't on food stamps, we're in the middle, and we're the ones, I think, getting the most frustrated with conditions, because it isn't the frustration of the underclass that don't see a way out of their situation. It's the frustration of those of us who see the corruption, who see the gaming of the system on both ends, who understand that there is bribery and greed and manipulation going on, and that it's preventing a decent person with a legitimate private sector entrepreneurial mindset from getting anywhere. It's that uprising that I think will occur. You know, Steve, you've been in the financial markets your whole life, and it's the way your brain works, or your professional life, and it's the way your brain works. For a lot of people, when you start talking about the Fed and currencies and alternate currencies and inflation versus deflation, it all becomes like a giant blur and a bit overwhelming, and it's why a lot of people tune it out. And while I haven't read the book yet, a book was just released called Popular Economics by a guy named John Tamney. And the book is subtitled, Popular Economics, What the Rolling Stones, Downton Abbey, and LeBron James Can Teach You About Economics. And I watched him interviewed recently, and what he did was, he said he got so annoyed with the way economics is taught in schools and the way economists who are supposedly so knowledgeable in positions of power actually deal with the economy and deal with finances, that he wrote this very, I would call it simplistic, but culturally connected, meaning the Rolling Stones, Downton Abbey. He uses examples in culture to explain very simply economic concepts. And I think it's a book I'm going to get and a book I'm going to read, and because I listened to him and I thought, you know, he's onto something. He realizes that there's a deliberate complexity and confusion for the very purpose of keeping people out of the loop. And the other point that I want to make right about this same topic is, I was listening to someone today who has a connection in the Treasury Department with someone who's been pretty forthcoming all along in a kind of a deep throat, if you remember, if you're of that era and you remember that in the Watergate hearings, Woodward and Bernstein had someone they termed deep throat who was giving them inside information from the Nixon administration and actually helped them blow open the Watergate scandal, this person has a similar individual in the Treasury Department who came to him the night before TARP and told him what was about to happen. But he said there was a way out, and they were gonna come in and rescue those banks. He was recently talking to this same, quote, deep throat person just over the weekend who was – they were talking about Greece and what's happening here with the printing of all the money and then the only way to get it back to being – to inflate our way out of it. And he said to this guy, he said to this deep throat character, what are they going to do this time given Greece? And he said, I honestly don't know. There doesn't seem to be a way out this time. He said, because all the banks around the world have been behaving the same way. And he said, even the IMF, the World Bank, there's no way to bail this out this time. And so I think we're very close to some kind of revelatory event, be it economic or be it social, where we are going to have to kind of bite the bullet and begin to look at things differently, probably begin to live differently, because you can only push this so far for so long. It's a closed system. At some point, there's going to be an equal and opposite reaction, and I think we're there. I think we're there, Steve.
Yeah, I don't think we're that far off, and I do believe what you said is that a lot of stuff is confusing, and most people do tune out of it. But it's one of those things that you really can't tune out of, because the government gets away with all the things that they're doing. I mean, people, it's kind of one of those things, people just know something's wrong, but they can't quite figure it out. I have a friend of mine who lives in New York City, and he's telling me about the explosive prices in real estate, and he says, you know, we're a society that's trapped in the city. And he's a gentleman that's very wealthy and has a, you know, a place in Manhattan that would like to sell it. And so he's like, yeah, I would like to sell it, but I'll only get, you know, at the end of the day, I'll only get 50 cents on the dollar for it, because after the taxes and the millionaire taxes and the 10% surcharge and everything else, I'll sell my place for the money that I'll get is half of what it's actually worth. And the person that buys it is going to have to pay 50% more because everything has doubled and tripled in price. So we live in a society where the people can't sell and the people who want to buy, it's just out of their reach. And so he says that's what, you know, people can't figure out and they can't understand. And when he said that, I feel like that's what's happening in our whole general economy. People can't, you know, sense these things are wrong and they can't quite put their fingers on it. And part of it is just, you know, it's a lack of economic education. There's a reason why people don't understand it. And I can say that, you know, that it cost me a fortune to learn what I learned. And I learned it just by reading hundreds and, you know, probably thousands of books on this subject. And it seems kind of ridiculous, but that's kind of what you have to do. You have to take the time to learn these things and find probably the best teachers of economics and economic history to understand it, because what the U.S. government is doing is really, it's criminal at this point.
Well, I think self-education is a good note to end on. It never hurts to make yourself smarter, and it never hurts to do your own homework. And that's why Steve and I do this show, to encourage you to empower yourself through gaining knowledge your own way, and one of those ways being to join us here at Above the Fray. Joining us tonight. We'll be back again Thursday at 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern. Remember to listen to my show, Inspirational Gold, on Tuesday nights at 6:30 here on Blog Talk Radio as well. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And you've been listening to Above the Fray. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at abovethefraypodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/abovethefraypodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.